the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea podcast, the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the USA Today NFL Wire site that covers Arizona Cardinals. And we continue with the opponent preview series, as we do every single offseason in July and August. And in this edition of the show, Vikings Wire managing editor Andrew Harbaugh joins me. Andrew, who's been running Vikings Wire for a little bit now, and the Cardinals will face the Vikings this coming season. Let me pull that up real quick. They will face the Arizona Cardinals in week 13 at home. It's December 1st, so we get towards the end of the season. Andrew, welcome to the show. Nice to meet you officially. Is this is the first time we've chatted, but other than this, haven't had really other opportunities to do so since you've joined the Wire.
Yeah, no, nice to meet you finally, Jess, and excited to get into it. And it's funny, July, it's like a switch hits and everybody's like, okay, we got training camps and we got through the fourth and college football's around the corner first, of course, and for some with the game, obviously, as we talked a little bit before, it's worth getting excited about. But no, it's cool to finally see some pads this month and get some news and all the fun little tidbits and rumors that may not mean nothing or mean everything that comes with July.
Absolutely.
So,
now
the best part of the year.
I'm now 47 years old. I played NCAA. It was on PlayStation 2, and I don't know if it was the last version of NCAA. I think it was 08 or 06, one of those years. And I would play them with Madden consecutively. I'd do a season with the NCAA, Yes. Export the draft class, Yes. Then import it on Madden, do that, then play a season of Madden, then go back to the NCAA. But that, you know, the PlayStation, PS2. I still have never, like, my oldest son's got an Xbox, but I only, like, in terms of video games on the newer consoles, the only thing I've ever done is simulate Madden games in the last, 5 years.
Yeah, and it's funny, I was talking to somebody this weekend, and I was saying I have to download Madden 24, because I haven't played a football game in so long, because Madden hasn't been good. And I don't have the income, dispensable income, to buy the Madden team packs. So I'm a true franchise simulate and enjoy the off-season type of guy. So I'm excited to have a harsh welcome and reality check when the new game comes out.
Well, the Cardinals will face the Vikings in week 13. The Vikings coming off of a 7-10 season. That was a disappointment. Well, a couple of things a disappointment. Obviously, Kirk Cousins got hurt after coming off the year that they played really, really well, winning all those close games, winning 13 games, winning the NFC North, only then to lose in the postseason to the New York Giants. Let's look back at last year first before we look into the offseason and what's coming in 2024 with the regular season. What was it that went well? And what didn't go well for Minnesota last year?
I think what went well, that and something I've written about a lot this offseason, is just how the defense in 1 year under Brian LaFleur has really started to shape an identity that it hadn't been having. Like, they had had consistent pass rush, they had consistent turnover making, but they didn't really have the ability to stop the big plays and be able to contain their opponents that well. But Flores brought an edge to the defense, a controlled edge. Now, we're not talking about a Greg Williams type of bounty thing here, but more or less the reason that the Dolphins hired him in the first place. He was able to lead that group in Miami. And they had great success with different players and different roles. Came up this year, and the defense had, and last year they had Daniel Hunter, of course, and a couple other bigger name guys, Harrison Smith, that fans know. But other than that, it was really a ragtag group that was really just put together. Chris Udofu-Mensa is still kind of building that defense. There's still some holes in it heading into this year, but last year, Brian Flores really did a lot with not much there to build off of. So that's something that I think going into this year, I'm really interested to see take the next step. Something that I think is concerning, and it's all, and honestly, it still is, because even though we got addressed, and I'm sure we'll talk about with the draft, when Kirk Cousins went down, the quarterback play was just a revolving door of pure chaos. Like, Jaren Hall was drafted,
Josh Dobbs.
Yes, and the Josh Dobbs experiment came through town, and Josh Dobbs, Jaren Hall, Nick Mullins, who's still around. Like, it just, and despite having Jordan Addison and Justin Jefferson, and I think they proved that this is a team on offense is going to live or die with the quarterback play, no matter who the playmakers are, including Hockenson before he got hurt. And also, too, the running back position. I'm always skeptical when a veteran running back comes in to kind of like give a facelift to a running game, which again we'll hit on. But last year, the Madison experiment did not work. Ty Chandler flashed at times, but the running game couldn't even be relied on when the passing game was inconsistent. So when you have somebody like Kevin O'Connell, who's seen as like this offensive guru that you bring in, with Kirk Cousins firing on all cylinders, one of the most explosive offenses in the league, but the drop-off they saw without Cousins wasn't something you want to see. So it's going to be interesting to see how they play it.
And you say that, and you know, from the outside, Kirk Cousins gets a lot of flack for the type of quarterback he is, but he certainly is one of the better quarterbacks in the NFL, and you immediately see that when he goes down. Jaren Hall got hurt. Josh Dobbs came in, showed a little magic early, which is what he did kind of with the Cardinals early on, and then kind of fell off the, like, his play. What was exciting and what was frustrating about Dobbs in the short time that he wasn't handling things at quarterback?
Yeah, I mean, I think it was, again, you talk about outside looking in on the Kirk Cousins aspect. Like, SportsCenter's not going to show you the missed third downs and the errant throws on first and second, or just the poor decisions. Like, you saw the comebacks and the fourth quarter plays, and it's kind of like, I inside baseball, I'm a very big Tim Tebow fan. I love Tim Tebow, and I thought he was great for Denver way back when, but kind of the same mode for Josh Dobbs, where you only saw the big plays. You didn't see the 3.5 quarters of, oh my gosh, I'm pulling my hair out, that you saw at time with Tebow and then Josh Dobbs. Not the greatest comparison to get if you're a quarterback nowadays, but the mold still fits, where every play you were just like living or dying on, is this going to be magic or no? And obviously in the NFL, there's a lot more no to that, at that position, especially. But yeah, it was just the true inconsistencies. Like, when he could make plays, and he deserves to be in the NFL too. It's not like one of those things where great season, go have fun in XFL or Canada or anything like that. No, he deserves to be on a roster. He's a great fill-in spotter, but man, when you're relying on him for a whole season, it's just, it's not there.
We know. with their one win that they had with Dobbs at quarterback.
Right.
That said, it is interesting, is kind of my observation of Dobbs last year was, what, as smart, because he has the reputation, he's a rocket scientist and things like that. But when it comes to his football, he is best when there's chaos and it's just athleticism, he's playing like backyard, you know, because the longer he played and the more was reliant on reads and this and that, like actually quarterbacking, that's when the play fell apart. Yep. And the more he had to think, ironically, the worse he played. But that's because football is not science. Obviously, last year, Danielle Hunter ended up with 16 and a half sacks. DJ Wanham with 8 sacks defensively. Offensively, you had TJ Hockenson nearly crack 1,000 yards, 960. Justin Jefferson goes over 1,000 yards, even in the disappointing season. Jordan Addison has 911 and 10 touchdowns. What did you think of Addison's play last year?
I think he was about as good as you could hope for a rookie wide receiver coming in. I mean, and especially, obviously he didn't fall. He was still a first-round pick, but going in there and still competing for targets with Hockenson for most of the year before he got hurt, Jefferson was and him seemed to work really well together when they were both on the field. Jefferson had a couple weeks where he missed with some soft tissue stuff. But I think the biggest thing is when Jefferson was out, Addison showed he could be able to handle the larger workload and could be explosive. Week one had that big play to introduce himself to the NFL, and it kind of set the tone for everything. But no, I think Addison showed he can definitely be a complimentary piece. I don't think he could be relied upon to be a one right now. Could he develop into one? Sure. You never know with this league what people can turn into. But I think right now, him opposite Jefferson is perfect because expectations will be high in from a fantasy and an output perspective. But I think what he does to help Jefferson and then in turn Jefferson to help him, those two are kind of a perfect blend. So no matter what happens with the quarterback position, again, even though we had, like we said, the ups and downs with it, the excuse of not having the good enough skill set skill weapons around him, Addison is a very good number two in that offense, and I think he can continue to be that. And that's a big talking point is his production going into this next year. I think he can replicate it no problem. A lot of people, especially in the fantasy world, don't think so, but that's their problem to figure out, whereas I look at it as the whole in a team and wins and losses, and I think Addison's doing more than enough pulling his weight as a wide receiver too there, and I think that'll continue.
Last season, they start 0-3, which was obviously rough, especially since after, what was it, 11-0 last year in one-score games to lose by 3, by 6, and by 4 points each in their first 3 games. They started off, they were, well, I'm looking at these one-score games, you're at 0-3, 1-3, 1-4, 2-4. Yeah, they struggled in those close games, but they pulled to 4-4. Do you think that if Kirk Cousins doesn't blow his Achilles, that they would end up being a playoff team?
It's hard to say. I think nothing was stopping Detroit last year. Like that was their season, and I still think that Dan Campbell and his team would have been able to make it through and win the division no matter what. I think the interesting part is, would they have affected the second half run we saw out of Jordan Love? I think it definitely would have been more interesting. That Packers team gave everything to San Francisco, as everybody saw. And obviously they walloped the Cowboys in the playoffs. But that's what everyone does anymore. Not to take a shot at them.
Hey, no one on who's listening to this podcast
exactly
is going to feel bad about the Cowboys.
Yeah, I figured this was a safe space, so I had to throw that in there. But no, I think it'd be interesting. I really don't know. Like I said, it really just depends on, I think, them and the Packers as far as how they both probably would have been playing down the stretch. Because Green Bay started out tough, too. Like, Jordan Love that first half. You had questions like, is this guy going to be worth it? And now here we are a year later.
You're like MVP candidate. Yeah, people are
talking about MVP candidate, big extensions coming up for him and everything. So, yeah, I think it would have been interesting. I could see them being left out in the cold because I think the defense, and like I said, as much as I highlighted it earlier with Brian Flores, it still had its holes. Pass rush was there. But, again, I think the pass coverage could have been a little bit better. But I think it would have been close. I again, there's still some holes where I think Green Bay was a little bit better than them. But I think it would have been interesting at least.
Well, I see, like, looking at the, you figure these close losses that you had to Denver, Chicago, and Cincinnati, probably might have been wins.
Yeah, if it were, or at least a better shot at them.
Right, right. And so, you know, they win 13 games the year before. I think they get to 10 wins. Now, losing those final three games in the division still might have hurt them, because I don't think Kirk Cousins necessarily is worth 24 points against the Packers. But lose and then playing, and also that was a brutal schedule at the end to have to play the Lions twice in 3 weeks to end the year. That's not fair to anybody. But yeah, let's move on to the next part. Coming up next on the Rise of Secret Podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk and Low. Let's move on and talk about what has happened in the offseason, a very busy offseason for the Minnesota Vikings. It's coming up next on Rise of Secret. We're back on the Rise of Secret Podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk on the Web. Talking to Andrew Harbaugh from Vikings Wire. In our opponent preview, as the Cardinals will face the Minnesota Vikings on the road in Week 13. Minnesota been very, very, very active in the offseason. Let's take us through free agency. I guess the first major thing is that they traded Danielle Hunter. Was that just out of need? Or what did the time just run out? Because Hunter and the Vikings and the contract situation, it seemed to be coming to a head for the last couple of years.
Yeah, and it had been a talking point for the last couple off seasons, and I think it was one of those things where they had gone to couples counseling as long as they could, and then they eventually just got to the point where they're like, it's not going to work. And I think they saw in free agency there were some other cheaper options, and they took advantage of that. And then also in the draft, very talented edge class, they had some options there. So I think it was just one of those things where the planets aligned just right to be like, okay, we can cut clean here, come up with a couple different options, play some money ball where, I mean, replacing 16 and a half sacks is tough. No matter, it's very rare you're going to get that production out of somebody.
Well, but in fairness, he's going to be turning 30 this season.
Yes.
And there's no guarantee he's going to be 16 and a half sacks and as a 30-year-old. That is very often the year when the production starts to fade for even for very good pass rushers.
Yeah, and there's always outliers, but Hunter could prove to be that. But again, if you're the Vikings and you're a team and you look at it, like, this team doesn't benefit from betting on, like you said, a 30-year-old pass rusher and hoping he can replicate that production, go out and get it and what they did in two younger pieces and who can complement each other the same way we talked about Addison and Jefferson on offense. Pass rush is king in the NFL. Quarterback positions, best way to stop it is that way. Helps out your cornerbacks and everything else. So, I think it was a perfect time for them to just – all the elements were there for a clean break and be able to find a replacement, and I think that's what they did. And I think it is going to be the right call, especially seeing, like, the money and everything that was tossed around afterwards.
And then obviously Kirk Cousins signs with the Atlanta Falcons, leaving Minnesota in a tough quarterback situation. They go out and sign Sam Darnold. How is that going to be a quarterback? We're going to talk about J.J. McCarthy here in a little bit when we talk the draft, but how much of a transition is that going to be post-Kirk Cousins? Because, you know, Kirk Cousins, very good quarterback, but also for a lot of a very frustrating quarterback because, and from my perspective, you always look at Kirk Cousins is like the quarterback. You're like, he's a good quarterback. And then you watch him. Is he a good quarterback? Then you look at the numbers. Like, he is a good quarterback. And then you look at certain things he does. You're like, but is he a good quarterback? Like, obviously he's a good quarterback. But would the Vikings have ever gotten where they wanted with Kirk Cousins?
No, I don't think so. And I think when he came a few years ago, they were in a position where, like, wow, this lifted the whole franchise, made him appealing for free agents when they were kind of in limbo after everything. And that was despite having Zimmer there, who's, depending on who you ask, either liked or loved or hated or loved in the league by players. But no, I think Kirk Cousins did about as much as he could with that, the teams he was given. Obviously they had some really high win rates, division titles, stuff like that. But it was, again, like we talked about with Dobbs, where the highlights were the ones, the plays you saw nationally. For Vikings fans, it's always going to be that fourth down play, and he throws to Hawkinson 2-3 yards behind the first down marker, and it's like, what are we doing? So for Vikings fans, those are the things they remember more than the consistent 400-yard games or the 30, 40-point games and the wins and the everything else with that. And it's tough. And my argument is, like, when I came from the outside looking in, when I started covering them, like, I thought, you want to keep Cousins. You don't want to lose them. And they ultimately decided to move on, and both parties, I think, were having issues as well. Again, like we talked about with Hunter. But for the teams that have quarterback problems, like, do you think Denver wouldn't have wanted Kirk Cousins the last couple years?
Trust me, having gone through years covering the Cardinals and being a Cardinals fan since the early 90s, my land, when you don't have a quarterback, when your quarterback play is terrible, like, Kirk Cousins is such a – is so much better. And I, here's the thing. Atlanta's roster that they have, adding Cousins to that, I think Atlanta's going to be sneaky good this year, you know, assuming Cousins can come back and play even near the level that he was playing before, because like and we the Cardinals went and traded for Desmond Ridder, but it felt like last year the talent on Atlanta's roster, that the quarterback play was keeping them down. And the one thing that Kirk Cousins does, like, his play does not be, he doesn't necessarily elevate a team to the next level, but he's not the problem. He's not the like we saw Houston last year with a band of guys that you're like, you're not afraid of. C.J. Stroud completely elevated them. While in Atlanta, between Taylor Heinicke and Desmond Ridder, you had a talented roster that just underachieved by a little bit. And so I think that'll be good. But after Danielle Hunter, after Kirk Cousins, were there any other impact losses in free agency?
I don't think there's anything that's going to be felt like those two. There's a couple losses here and there. Again, they didn't really have a whole lot of free agency issues. This coming year is going to be very interesting as far as upcoming free agents. They have a lot of cap space coming up too. I think that's going to be where next offseason kind of sees more of a roster overhaul. This year, it was kind of more on the smaller end because, like, offensive lines really stayed the same. They had lost Risner for a little bit, but they ended up re-signing him, and now he's competing for a spot again. Receivers stayed the same with Addison Jefferson. Hawkinson's still there. Defensive line, they lost Hunter, replaced him with Jonathan Grenard from Houston. Ironically, those two trading places.
Right. Which, by the way, Jonathan Grenard, pretty solid, quietly solid player. But, yeah, that defense, is, you know, they added some horses to that defense. Jonathan Grenard, linebacker Blake Cashman, Andrew Van Ginkel, super productive there in Miami. Shaq Griffin at cornerback. And you also add on the, you know, these are guys that you won't get super excited about, but for depth, you add Jihad Ward and Jonah Williams, the other Jonah Williams that plays defense. Added to that, signing Sam Darnold, adding Aaron Jones. Who do you think is going to be of those guys? Who makes the biggest difference this coming season?
I said earlier, I'm hesitant. I'm hoping and thinking Aaron Jones has at least another year in the tank, which they got him on a 1-year deal. So if that's all they have, that's all they have. That's fine. But I think Aaron Jones in that running game, like, not having that to lean on last year when the quarterback play wasn't there, was a death sentence at times. Like, yeah, you still won 7 games, but if you had a consistent running game, control that time of possession when you don't have that quarterback play, keeps the defense off, gives them a breather, ends up making a big difference, especially in one-score games. So I think if Aaron Jones comes in and can be – he doesn't have to be a a workhorse back by any means. If he just does his usual 200 plus carries and they work in some other guys, like Ty Chandler flashed a little bit at times. He can't be the guy, but I think that he could be a fun rotation piece alongside Jones on certain situations. I think that could be the biggest thing on offense. And then defense, the linebacking group you talked about with Cashman and Van Ginkle, I think that's going to be the real difference maker, especially in the NFC North, where you've got the two-headed running back monster in Detroit with Gibbs and Montgomery. Chicago's looking to redo their stuff. They brought in DeAndre Swift and drafted Rashawn Johnson last year. And then it's funny, you cover this division, and there's always one team you can't remember. Green Bay obviously brings in Josh Jacobs, who led the NFL in rushing last year. So, I mean, just as big as the quarterbacks are in the division, running backs are too. And whenever the quarterback plays down and you want to rely on the running game, you got to be able to stop that. And I think they knew that, and I think Brian Flores is going to be able to scheme with Van Ginkle and Cashman. And I think they're going to be the biggest impacts on defense. And Cashman's a fun homecoming story. He was drafted out of Minnesota a couple years ago. He comes back home and is excited to be back there.
And then going to the draft was, well, all the talk was after Sam Darnold. Before we go to, if Sam Darnold had gone into this season as a starter, maybe he starts off the season as a starter. What do you think he brings? How people are talking about, like there's some people who are still part of that Sam Darnold hive. I'm like, Darnold is incredibly talented, but also unlike Kirk Cousins, who does not turn the ball over. You look at those interception rates for Kirk Cousins, and they are low, you know, 2.5% and lower consistently, 1.7, 1.4, 1.2, 1.6%. Sam Darnold is very prone to the turnovers, and yes, he can make the big throw. How much did you believe in that move from the start, or did you think that they were always going to draft a quarterback?
I think when they signed, it's kind of like New England was the same way. They signed Jacoby Brissett. You're like, okay, bridge quarterback situation. Same thing with Minnesota. They signed Sam Darnold. My immediate thought was, okay, bridge quarterback situation. I think the difference between the two is I think New England is going to go with their rookie first. I think Minnesota is going to really try hard not to put McCarthy out there right away because they are working on, and it's been reported, they're working on his footwork and some throwing mechanics they want to clean up and fix. He's not used to having to pass the ball 20, 30 times a game. Like he joked in an interview, he had one 300-yard game in his career, and it was against Purdue after they messed with his, like, meditation warm-up he does before every game. So unless Kevin O'Connell plans on going over there with a drum line to mess up his routine every game, I don't know what to expect out of McCarthy. But at the same flex, to go back to the point, I don't really have high expectations at all for Sam Darnold. Like Vikings fans
shouldn't. Because
no,
look at his career. Like, talent up the wazoo. His arm talent is incredible. He's athletic. But he gets hurt, and he makes dumb throws.
Yeah, and that's the thing everyone's been saying is he's never had skill set receivers like this. Like, he's never played with anyone like Jefferson or Hawkinson or Addison. Last year in San Francisco, he started after they already clinched everything and they were setting starters. I'm not counting that. Carolina was a dumpster fire situation. That's bad, too. And New York Jets are the New York Jets.
Right.
So
you never develop quarterbacks there, ever.
No. But that being said, this to me, and I think Darnold knows it, is I have no more excuses because I'm finally surrounded with a team that's got a good offensive line. I've got a good offensive-minded head coach, all these good players around me. If I'm going to show I was worth the third pick in the draft, I'm going to show now I was worth the third pick in the draft way back when. But that being said, I've seen nothing to believe he could show he was worth that. And, even if, they were talking if you can get his best year out in New York, which I think his best year in New York was barely 3,000 yards and 16 touchdowns and 14 interceptions, not including the fumbles and the other turnover-worthy plays that you can go on PFF and look through. But I think it's going to be middle of the year. They have that bye right after they go to England to play the Jets, ironically. And I think that could be seen as like the key turning point. But I definitely think we see McCarthy by the time the Cardinals fans are ready for the Vikings to come in. But I think they're going to try everything in their power to delay it. And I think you're going to potentially lose the season, but it'll be tough to see. I have very low expectations for the Sam Darnold experiment.
J.J. McCarthy was the talk, especially with the Cardinals at the fourth pick. When Minnesota acquired that second first-round pick, it felt like a telegraphed move that they were definitely going to trade up to get the quarterback. Was J.J. McCarthy always the guy? Or did they have their eye on, say, Drake May, and they just weren't able to pull off the trade?
I think they always had McCarthy, and there's a story that went around where when they went to visit McCarthy at Michigan, he had to delay dinner with them because he had to go to an alumni event. And they watched him interact with everybody at the alumni event, and they said, this is the type of guy you want in the community, the guy you want around your fans, and the guy you want in your locker room, because he just carried himself the right way. Not to mention he's a hockey fan. Of course, any hockey fan is going to blend in just fine in Minnesota. But they talk about constantly, yeah, the tools he brings as a player, but they talk just as much about the off-field stuff and the leadership roles. Not that May or anybody else didn't have that. I just think McCarthy in that unique setting got to show something that nobody else got to, and that stuck in their minds. So it was one of those things, again, planet aligns perfectly, and you're able to take advantage of it. So I think McCarthy was their guy the whole time. I think they had that extra pick if they had to trade up to get him because of the chaos they could have. Obviously, the Michael Penix monkey wrench was thrown
wild.
In there.
That was wild.
And it still blows everybody's minds, especially after the behind-the-scenes shows showing that Atlanta could have traded out with different people. But no, I think McCarthy was their guy, and I think that extra pick was there for security, and obviously it worked out well for them that they didn't have to use it.
Yes. So tell me, because what do you think about the tangibles, all the things pre-draft? Everything about McCarthy talks about the other aspects of playing quarterback and less about the quarterback talent. What is your take on McCarthy as a thrower of the football and potential, you know, field general? There are lots, and I'm going to say this, there are lots of quarterbacks in the NFL that have the other stuff. Josh Dobbs is one of those guys. Does McCarthy have the talent to be a high-level quarterback in the NFL?
I think he can. I definitely think he can make all the NFL throws, and that's a line you always hear from people that do draft reports, myself included, is can he make the NFL throws? Yeah, he can. He can recognize the windows. That offense at Michigan was very run-heavy, and anybody coming from that and going to the pros is going to see a little bit of a hiccup. Thus why they sign a Sam Darnold, and they want to wait and work on some things. But no, I think he can be there. I mean, I'd be honest. I had him behind May and Penix because I liked their arms to be a little bit more lively. But again, he's young enough and he's going to be around long enough. He'll develop the arm strength. I think right now, if they can just, he's make sound decisions. And I think that's all they're worried about, where if something happens and he throws an interception, like this past year, Bowling Green, he threw, I think, 3 interceptions. Never let it rattle him. He kept taking chances and doing what he could, and obviously they relied on the run game that day. But he showed that it doesn't affect him long-term. And, like, he bounced back, and I think the rest of the year he only threw, like, 2 interceptions. So he's going to be bound for some bad games here and there, but I think he's shown that between the ears is what's going to make him successful in the NFL, and the arm talent's going to develop as he gets older, because out of the entire group of quarterbacks, he's one of the younger ones, and I think that's something that the Vikings also liked in his evaluation, is the upside is very much on an upward trajectory, and there's not a plateau in sight.
Dallas Turner, they take 17th overall, a steal of a pick, if I believe that to be the case, because I believed that the Cardinals, I would have loved to have seen the Cardinals move up to get Dallas Turner. Add him to a room that includes Andrew Van Ginkel, that includes Jonathan Grenard. How good do you think Turner can be in year one? Obviously, first-year pass rushers are rarely like elite end. So you usually see even the best ones finish with, you know, 6-9, rarely in the double digits. But what do you think is possible for Turner?
I think Turner, because he has that presence of Grenard opposite him, I think he has a shot at getting those double-digit numbers and really making an impact. Like, he's been a very popular defensive player of the year bet, depending on which places you look. Again, you talked about him being a steal. All those defensive guys that fell to the second half of the first round really proved to be steals because...
That's true. All the offensive players early on.
Leotuolatu had no business making it to the Colts, and then Dallas Turner had no business making it to the Vikings, and so many from there and on. Terrion Arnold to Detroit, a whole bunch of others. But no, I think Turner definitely, again, pass rushers on the defensive side are the position you see kind of develop the longest, like tight ends are on offense. Sometimes you get a rare diamond in year one, but it's really the years two and three is where you want to see the production really take off. And I think Turner's set up perfectly for that to be alongside Grenard. I think Flores is going to put him in positions and line him up in different spots to be able to make plays. So I think, again, just how the McCarthy pick was kind of perfect for them. I think the Dallas Turner pick somehow was even better as far as landing spot, situation, coaching staff, and everything.
Then the rest of the draft goes as they didn't have anything in the second and third round. Kyrie Jackson, cornerback, tragic accident that happened over the weekend. Walter Roos, Will Richard, Michael Juergens, and Levi Drake Rodriguez. Of those guys, and Jackson, any of those guys, were there plans, aside from Richard, were there plans for any of those guys to have a real role this year as rookies?
Yeah, I think, and it sucks more than just the loss of life, or on top of the loss of life part, but Jackson was really poised, I think, for a big role in year one. Like, that's one thing Brian Flores has shown everywhere he's been, like even in Pittsburgh when he was coaching linebackers. He's able to set guys up to make plays, and I think Jackson was going to be one of them. Former four-star recruit, coming out of junior college, went from Charlotte to Alabama, went from Alabama to Oregon. Everywhere he was at, the talent was always there. It was just more or less putting it all together consistently. And talk out of Vikings camp was, this kid's done everything right so far. You saw, based on the reactions, his teammates loved him right away from day one. And it stinks, too. Like, that morning we had a piece that we were going to schedule for the afternoon where Alec Lewis of The Athletic, who's been doing a great job covering the team as well, had constantly been praising Kyrie Jackson and the role that he was going to have this year. He was probably going to be the starting outside corner opposite Byron Murphy Jr. And Doug Farrar, the NFL editor for the Wire sites, he had written several pieces saying that Jackson's one of the steals of the draft from days two and three because of his role and his fit in that defense. So Jackson definitely was going to be a big monumental piece. And then obviously fate had different plans, unfortunately. And honestly, outside of Jackson, this draft class, like, I was less than impressed. Like, Walter Roos is a developmental piece of tackle. You have Darisaw and O'Neal as two bookend tackles for your offensive line. I didn't quite get that. I'm not a fan of drafting kickers. Roberto Aguayo ruined that for me. I don't care what round it is, first, second, third, all the way through seven. And then, yeah, just there were some other pieces. I wasn't a fan of trading away all the picks, too, going into next year. Like, I think that's really putting all your eggs into one basket, and it's not something that I think is too ideal of a situation. But, again, if you hit on McCarthy and you hit on Turner, none of these other picks have to turn into anything. So
that's true.
So that's where the lay of the land is. But yeah, I was less than impressed after Jackson with everything else that was done.
Coming up next on the Rise of Sierra podcast, best our Cardinals talk on the web. Let's move on and look ahead to the 2024 season and expectations for Minnesota. That's coming up next on Rise of Sierra. We're back on the Rise of Sierra podcast, best our Cardinals talk on the web. Minnesota in 2024, what are reasonable expectations for this team with this roster, with in this division where Green Bay and Detroit look really good? The Bears seem to be ascending, and now you've got the Vikings with Sam Darnold and J.J. McCarthy poised to take over at quarterback. What are sort of hopes and expectations for this team?
It really depends on who you ask. I was just looking myself to see what I had for their record prediction. I don't think it's going to be playoffs by any means. I think a lot has to happen for that to be a reasonable and realistic option for them. I think this is going to be a season where they find a lot of pieces that are going to be long-term solutions versus short-term answers at the time. Like I said, they have a lot of free agency options and decisions to come up next offseason. So I think it's really kind of evaluating the roster this year is going to be the idea, which is crazy when you talk about 13 wins 2 years ago to be, okay, we're at the evaluating stage, but this team is not hitting the fact that's where they're at.
Like they play the Giants, okay, they should. I wouldn't be surprised if they win that season opener. But then they follow that up with the 49ers, Texans, Packers, and then the Jets with Aaron Rodgers, ideally. That's going to be a rough bit right before the bye. And then you close the season with Green Bay and Detroit. And then you've got a stretch after the bye where you've gone the road for four games in 5 weeks. Doesn't seem very ideal for a schedule.
Yeah, and that after that bye, like, that's the question is, going into that, like you said, you had Giants week one, which could be anything. You don't know what you're going to get with Daniel Jones and that whole team. But after that, you're going to be going into the bye, and you're probably not looking at a very good record. Looking at a decision. So then the decision is, do we just ride it out with Sam Darnold, or do we throw to our rookie, as you pointed out, 4 out of 5 games on the road, not against any fluff opponents either, not that there is in the NFL, but the Vikings drew a very tough schedule in 2024. I think that's going to just cause them to not really know what to do, but be in a lose-lose situation where damned if you do, damned if you don't, really, with playing with McCarthy. Like, so.
Best case scenario, what do you think their ceiling is for wins? What do you think their floor is? And what do you think will ultimately will be what their record is?
I think their ceiling, again, a lot has to happen. I think with this, it would include McCarthy coming in and playing very well right away. I think they could win 9-10 games, potentially. I still don't think, even if they qualify.
Everything going well. We understand. Like, everything going well, they hit double-digit wins and sneak into the playoffs. I could see that, but that's like everything going right. And that rarely happens.
And I think the more realistic thing is, I think they're looking at a top-5 pick next year, I think is what happens at the end of the day.
And then the Week 13 game, how do Vikings fans, how do you view the Cardinals as an opponent this upcoming season?
I think no matter who you are in the NFL, let me get a little bit of fans from the Cardinals side. I think you showed last year after Gannon's abysmal introduction to everybody on social media and through press conferences proved to be one of the tougher matchups of any team in the league. And I think that very much stays the same. Defense had a lot of young pieces for you guys, and you got better. The Kyler Murray, I think, is really coming out on a revenge tour this year. Michael Wilson taking that next step and so on. I don't need to tell you how your team is. But I think those parts that I mentioned are what makes you guys a very tough matchup for Minnesota. It really just depends on the defense. I think I think you could be looking at a potential shootout. I also think you could be looking at a potential blowout for you guys. I don't see where there's one area where Minnesota can necessarily take advantage of when they play the Cardinals. But that being said, I think the biggest storyline is going to be just if the secondary, how your receivers are playing at that point in the year and how they develop versus how the secondary, which is now worse off with the loss of Kyrie Jackson. It was already going to have question marks around it. I think that's going to be the biggest story going into that matchup, and the linebacking group with Cashman and Van Ginkle, how they're able to contain Kyler. To be honest, I don't think they can or they will. So that's where I think you guys could have a very favorable late season matchup. If you guys are trying to fight for a playoff spot, this could be a matchup you circle around and be like, okay, here's a momentum builder going into the last 4 weeks of the season.
And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the Best of Cardinals Talk on the web. A big thank you to Andrew Harbaugh from Vikings Wire. In addition to Vikings Wire, Andrew, is there anywhere else that my listeners can find your work or on social media?
No, I mean, you can find me on Twitter at Mandrew NFL. Probably not a lot of Viking stuff you guys may be interested in, but I'm also mixing in draft reports for summer scouting in there as well, just kind of as some filler. So if you're a draft fan, there is a lot of content on there coming out. So usually there's at least one or two reports every day, even if it's not the Viking stuff you want to read.
All right, man. Andrew, thank you so much for your time. Then that wraps up this edition of the show. We'll have more opponent shows, opponent preview shows in the next few days. So that's Andrew Harbaugh. I'm Just Root. Thanks for listening. We will be back again soon.
Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise Up Red Sea, Be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.